Well, especially in the beginning, it will grow a bit as you get more people on the program.
So, Elizabeth, all of that discussion in the background about the income amount and the phase out, that is just background. It doesn't relate specifically to what this bill does.
Mr. Chairman Shadley, yeah, the reason why I kind of wanted to bring it up was to make sure everybody was clear on the discussions we had yesterday, too, because I wanted to make sure the amendment was what everybody wanted as far as that we have to have that 50 cents for each dollar. It wouldn't make sense to have it on the federally adjusted gross income when the base for that $27,500 isn't the federally adjusted gross income.
Household income.
It's the household income. I just wanted to make sure everybody was clear and you're fine with that change and understanding of the program.
Well, let's get started. So we invite our Department of Revenue friends up, John Phillips and Shirley Looper.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of this committee. My name is John Phillips with the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division, and with me is Shirley Leeper. She's the program specialist in the Senior and Disabled Deferral Program. I just want to make 4 points about this bill, and then we'd be available for questions. The first point is about the bill itself. Unamended, what the language is trying to do, we believe, is to point out the situation where a person who is receiving Social Security survivor benefits would not qualify for the program even if they're disabled under the current law. And sometimes a person that is disabled can make a choice between survivor benefits or their disability benefits and chooses the survivor benefits, which would then eliminate them from the program. So this adds that in lieu of language in line 10 to say that if they otherwise qualify but are choosing to take the survivor benefits, then they would still be eligible for the program. That's the first point.
And I want to note in the amendment, have you seen the dash ones?
Yes.
The dash ones address the question I had on line 8 where it says a person who is eligible. And I was wondering, of course, that would be a determination made by Social Security and not by the Department of Revenue, and so I was just curious how that would be made, but I see the dash one amendments have narrowed that down, and that's a person then who has been determined to be eligible. So they would actually have their Social Security determination that would be submitted as part of the application. And then they'd be eligible even if it takes some time to get the benefits, the payments coming in. Is that the way this is designed to work then?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That was my point number 2.
Okay.
Actually, very good. And that was our suggestion because we didn't want to be in a position of making a determination about who qualifies for Social Security disability.
Yeah.
Thank you. Point number 3.
Let me guess.
Okay. Point number 3 was to add the word blindness to this bill. We thought that that was what the intention was last session, and going through it and getting some Attorney General advice, it looked like there might have been an issue there. And so just to clarify it, we wanted to add that word. So that was our other point with the amendment. And finally, the other language in the dash one amendments that's been added on line 22 and below on the dash one is the reference to disclosure amounts. And this is because with the program, the way it was written with the 50 cents on the dollar over the threshold in subsequent years of qualification, it creates a situation when we transfer data to counties to say, instead of paying the full amount of the tax, we will pay a portion of the tax that anyone who was interested, some person that was interested in researching a situation, finding out who qualifies for this program, who's a certain age, and what tax the department paid if it wasn't the full amount, could back into someone's federally adjusted gross income, and that would constitute a disclosure from the department. And so rather than to avoid that situation, we're suggesting this language in the dash one, which is the same language we proposed in the 2208 yesterday.
Well, then I'll ask the question I had about the language in 2208 yesterday that we didn't get around to since we got so far off the track on. Help me out. It says the notice stating the amount of property taxes paid by the department and any other county records indicating those amounts are not subject to the prohibitions against disclosure. How does that make them, I thought we were trying to protect something here.
Well, we're trying to protect the department from not being liable for disclosing information.
Oh, that's what we're talking about. We're not protecting the taxpayer, we're protecting the, okay.
That's correct.
Because it's going to come out on the county tax roll.
Right.
Okay, I understand. And I, when I saw that not subject to the prohibitions against disclosure, okay.
And when we, excuse me, Mr. Chair, and when we've sorted out the program and done all the programming and sorted out when the transfers of documents and information would go to the counties and back and forth, we found out that we would have to transfer that information, and then, and in order to get the program up on time, without any other amendments, this seemed to work. So, my fourth point is about the question Representative Witt raised yesterday, and that is regarding the threshold amounts, and that's I haven't seen the language on that yet, so we're prepared to comment about the questions we're asked about the threshold, and Shirley advised me that was $27,500, and we're available to answer any other questions on that.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that since it's come up in the context of this bill for background anyway. You've got $27,500 household income threshold, and then explain to us how that works with the criteria for adjusted gross income that then applies to continuation of the program.
For the record, Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Shirley Leeper with the Oregon Department of Revenue, Property Tax Division. How the program works is the household income is to come on the program. That's the $27,500. So the first year, they're going to have 100% of their taxes paid because they are well below the $32,000 federal adjusted gross income, which is the test after that first year. Each year thereafter, we do check their income. If they exceed the $32,000 federal adjusted gross income, under the old law, if they were below it, we paid everything. If they were above it, we paid nothing. House Bill 2901 changed that, so each year when we run the income match, if they're above $32,000 federal adjusted gross income, which is a much higher test, of course, than the household income, and it's prorated at that 50 cents on the dollar that they exceed.
Until it's down to zero.
That's right.
There's no cliff at some point. It just phases right down to the last dollar.
Each case is individual, each client.
If I might add, my understanding of it, and I wasn't involved in last session's bill, my understanding of it is well, there was a decision about that this being a low-income program, and so the amount of 27.5 was chosen as the sort of entry point. And then in order not to kick people off the program year in, year out, if they had particularly higher earnings in any given year, then this other mechanism with the higher threshold but 50 cents on the dollar concept came out. So
that one year, if you're over $32,000, you're going to get a reduced payment, but you won't be kicked off the program. So the next year, if you're under $32,000, you're still in the program and you'll get 100% paid.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Committee, if they are over the income limit and they're still entitled to have part of their taxes paid with the 50 cents on the dollar, we would pay up to the amount they are allowed. They would be responsible to pay the difference.
Right.
Let's say the next year out, they have income that is so high they're not entitled to any tax to be deferred. We would not defer any tax for that year. They would be responsible to pay that. But the account that we have is held. So they can come in and out of the program each and every year depending on their federal adjusted gross income.
Didn't we do a smart thing last session?
Yay.
Do you remember that? No, Representative Hess.
Very basic question here. These are tax payments, not property tax deferrals.
Right.
Really. And, correct?
Chair and Representative Hess, they are property tax payments that we make in behalf of the person to the county.
Okay. But they're not going to be deferred to another time. I mean, if their income somehow went up or would they be, they're not, just to clarify this on mine, they're not responsible for some deferred tax, like say the farm deferral or something like that.
It's not tied into any other program. It still totally stands alone.
So that you collect, it is deferred in the sense that the Department of Revenue pays the county the tax, and account accrues then to the taxpayer, or on the taxpayer, and that is collectible either on the sale of the property or the death of, yeah, sale of the property or death of the taxpayer. Isn't that, are those the two events?
Those are basically the two events.
So if you come off the program but remain in the house and still alive, you don't have to pay anything back, you just don't get the benefit of it.
That is correct.
Mr. Chair, wasn't there something last session that we learned that there, interest accrues, or somehow we don't lose, the state isn't losing right. money off of this program?
Yeah, there is interest on the accrual, on the deferral.
Mr. Chair and committee, yes. The interest is 6% simple interest on the unrepaid tax amount.
And if I might add that delinquent interest for property taxes unpaid is 16%. So there is a difference between what the county would get if a person just didn't pay their tax
mm-hmm.
and what we would get.
Mm-hmm. And Chair, one other thing, we also get the 3% discount for them.
Oh, okay.
So it's a pretty good deal that first year out, especially.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The expenditure then is, are we still talking, maybe mixing apples to oranges, the $9 million?
No, that's right. That's yeah, that's elderly rental assistance.
And what was the expenditure here?
This is property tax deferral. These are for people who own their homes and are paying property taxes. I'd be curious to know, because it'll come up again later, just for further background, since we talked about it yesterday and today, on the deferral program. I remember from last year that even with this, I think, you know, good and useful program, you still have folks out there who just, you can qualify for it, who just will not use it because they just don't want to go into debt.
Chair and committee, that's correct. Some of them don't want to go into debt. They want to be able to leave everything for their children.
Do you have any idea what the utilization rate is?
We're at about 9 to 10% of the people that can qualify for the program actually are on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the record also, we are the largest in the nation. And the oldest in the nation for this type of program. The closest state, I believe, is maybe California with about 1.5 to 2% of participants for a similar program.
Okay. All right, any questions? Elizabeth, of course, we were scheduled for public hearing only and not work session. How does... Or maybe John, or Shirley, you can help me. How does this relate to the bill yesterday? Do we need to move these together?
Mr. Shirley, I think 2208 could move independently. It sounded as though Representative Witt wanted to add an amendment to that bill.
Or to hijack it.
Yeah. and this, what we tried to do is to add the amendments regarding the blindness
yeah.
and the...
Right.
And the disclosure to both, so that if either one passed.
Okay, that's why I was. Okay, that's why I wanted to make sure with the same amendments coming in on this bill as we had yesterday. Okay. So, Shirley, when Bill asked you, and when Representative Witt asked you yesterday about the program, and you said, "I think that's right, but I'll have to check with somebody who knows more."
Right.
That's Ms. Leeper.
That is the person.
Okay, glad to have you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Any questions? All right, let's get this scheduled for work session.
Okay.
Take care of this. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, you're
yes.
fine with having
mm-hmm.
this,
yes.
right?
Yeah,
and
we can deal with
the other
one in the other bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We don't need to hold them both up then. Fiscal impact on this?
It's very minor.
Do we need to get a fiscal impact statement before?
We do not have one yet.
Okay. I probably should get one because somebody on the floor will ask. Okay. If you have it, they won't ask. If we don't,
well,
that works, you know.
Yeah. Representative Bates, I think they would have one before it went to the floor, but just today.
All right. Let's get this set then. We'll come back to it in work session. Thank you very much. Close that public hearing and open a public hearing on House Bill 2439. And is that yours, too?
Yeah.
Okay. And invite Deborah to come up while... This stuff is giving us the background on House Bill 2349.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I have a preliminary staff measure summary, and I have a section by section. Probably would be just as easy. to go through this section by section, because it's kind of a longer bill, and then I don't have a revenue impact, but I'll talk about that at the end. Basically, what the bill is doing is it's establishing a property tax rebate program, and this is along the lines of the HARP program, the Homeowners, Renters, and Rebate Program that was in place between 1973 and 1991 in Oregon. And so basically with HARP, what that program did is it gave property tax refunds to homeowners and renters with low income, household income, and it gave complete property tax rebates. And in 1975, as we talked about yesterday, also Oregon has the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, which provided also rental relief for elderly persons with low incomes. And HARP refunds were phased out and then ended in 91. One of the primary reasons for the elimination of the HARP program was the cost. And if you look at some of the data in the 1980s, the average general fund expenditure for HARP and the Elderly Rental Assistance Program was on average about $77 million a year. So we've had various versions of a senior property tax rebate since HARP was phased out, and this is just one version in House Bill 2439. And just for reference, last session we had also House Bill 2792, which is very similar to this bill that you're seeing today, and that was passed by both houses, but it was vetoed by the governor. So with House Bill 2439, in Section 1 to 3, you've got basically the definitions, cooperative housing corporation, dwelling unit, prime principal resident, senior citizen, and basically starting then with Section 4, the requirements for the program. And the requirements are that the senior homeowner must meet for a property tax rebate are that they have to be 60 years old or older, they have to own and occupy the residence, have an adjusted federal gross income of less than $30,000, and the assessed value of the home has to be less than $100,000. The amount of the property tax rebate shall equal 5% of the property tax that is actually imposed on the senior's residence. So it is just a small portion of the total property taxes that actually becomes a rebate. The rebate then is allowed during when the taxpayer pays out their income taxes, it becomes an income tax credit against the taxpayer's income or the income taxes. So if the income tax rebate is greater than the tax liability of the taxpayer, then the excess credit amount shall be paid to the taxpayer by the Department of Revenue. And in Section 5, it's talking about dealing with the people who are deferring their property taxes, like we were just talking about the Senior Property Tax Deferral Program. So if you defer your property taxes after July 1st of 2002, then the taxpayer cannot claim this property tax rebate on their income taxes. But if the property owner deferred property taxes before July 1st, 2002, and then decided not to continue on the deferral program, they could then claim a property tax rebate on their income taxes. In Section 6, it's defining the procedures by which a property tax rebate can be claimed if the senior is residing in a dwelling owned by a cooperative housing corporation. Section 7 goes through and stipulates that a senior property tax rebate shall be funded in conjunction with the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, which is the way HARP used to be. And then Section 8 says that the property tax rebate will begin on or after January 1st of 2002. So for the first eight sections, you're basically got an annual property tax rebate program. And then in Section 9, you've got this retroactive portion, where the retroactive portion will allow a property tax rebate for 12 prior property tax years beginning on or after July 1st of 1990 and before July 1st, 2002. The same requirements apply to seniors receiving a property tax rebate as also can claim the retroactive portion. One thing that the Department of Revenue will probably discuss too is that there may need to be additional language in this retroactive section in order to address the deferral program participants, because it doesn't address whether or not they would be able to qualify for the retroactive portion. And then finally, Section 10 does not specify any particular appropriation, but it does, you know, leave blanks there to put in how much appropriation would be needed for the property tax rebate and refunds or, and the retroactive senior property tax rebate. Now, as far as the revenue impact, I've just kind of ran some numbers and started in that way. I didn't give you a formal statement because it's not really completed, but basically on an annual amount, starting after 2003 would begin when the program could start having rebates, you would, it's estimated that this 5% tax rebate would be roughly about $5 million annually, and that's not taking into consideration the retroactive portion. Okay, now the retroactive portion is the one that I haven't completed yet, and that would be sizably bigger.
Thank you. Which one of you wants to start off?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue, and just a few points. First of all, the funding mechanism in this bill is the same as the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, and we discussed yesterday issues around that. Elizabeth Harshenko was here to present some concerns that we have. So if possible, whatever solution we arrive at on that, perhaps this could be made consistent with it or they be addressed together. We have that. And then, as Lizbeth mentioned, the whether or not the participation in the senior deferral program for 90 through 2002 would disqualify a rebate under this, under Section 9. It's not clear to us. As it's written, it seems that it would allow the rebate, even though the person was on senior deferral in those earlier years. And then also, if we could have just some language around verification provided to the department or as required by the department. There's nothing in the bill that requires attachment of a property tax statement to verify, for example, the assessed value of the property. And I'm sure legislative council would have just some standard wording that would solve that. And also, it's my understanding that we do have the records for the older years to be able to verify the federal adjusted gross income for people who are taking the retroactive rebate. For the taxpayers themselves, that may not be easy information to come up with if folks aren't keeping their income tax returns for 10 years, for example. And then I'll let John talk about what might be available as far as the property tax statements for those older years.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue, and I just wanted to address a couple of words in the bill refer to the fact that the rebate is for taxes paid, and so there would be some kind of mechanism needed for us to check to make sure that the taxes were in fact paid. It doesn't say in whole or in part, but I think we can come to some kind of conclusion about that. I think all the counties would do retain records for all the years, and so I think although it would be very difficult, we could, because for 10 years ago, not all of them were automated, but there is a possibility for this retroactive portion that we could get that information. It's just, would be challenging. That's just a comment on the choice of the words taxes paid.
Well, this came out of the interim from the Speakers Action Network. Is there anybody here who participated in that, who wants to speak for the bill?
Could you remind us what the Speakers Action Network is?
Was?
Was? May, shall be, what?
No? I don't.
Was this speaker asked?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it came out of the last interim through the Legislative Council Committee. Representative Bates.
Is the purpose of this bill to reduce income taxes for senior citizens on low income? Is that the purpose of this bill? And who have to own a home? I'm trying to figure why it's 5% and what's this bill trying to get to? I mean, it looks like it's reducing income taxes for low income people, seniors, who happen to own a home less than worth less than $100,000. And what?
They
have tax liability. So what's the, and they don't have a tax liability, it actually pays them something, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So what's the purpose, I mean, what are we trying to get to here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I can only speculate, but rather than having the local governments lose the funding by providing a property tax rebate directly, it seems that it's being provided through the income tax program. And as you said, it would reduce any income tax liability that person would have. Or actually provide them with money if they didn't have an income tax liability.
I guess my question, we have a couple of other proposals for this. How do you see this, either in the, not specifically to this bill, but to the program concept in general, how do you see it working with the deferral program? Are they at odds? Can we make them work together so that we, for those who, like we talked about before, that just, you know, will not go into debt and will not participate in the deferral program, but, you know, want to keep paying their taxes as best they can and could use some relief? Is there a population that would use this that would not use the senior deferral program? Welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Committee, I don't have a real good feel.
I'm sorry if you could give your name one more time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Record.
Shirley Leeper with the Oregon Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. I don't have a feel for how many people might use this program versus the other. It would be more money for some of those in that population. But I don't know if that would deter them from coming on deferral for the small amount they would get.
If I might add, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips, for the record, there are, as you said, other proposals too. So there's just a number of them we're trying to respond to, and I'm not sure how whether you know they're all thought through at the same time or by the same group. Maybe this is a great place to have it.
We wanted to start on that today, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this proposed measure, in essence, an attempt to create some equivalent relief for homeowners that currently exist for renters under the elderly rental assistance provisions? We're providing some assistance to low-income renters through the ERA program. We're not providing a comparable type of relief, are we, to low-income seniors who are paying property taxes?
I don't know.
They're homeowners. I mean, is this one way we should be looking at this measure, as an attempt to provide some equivalent assistance to lower-income seniors, in this case, those who are homeowners?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I believe that is one way to look at it. We do have, of course, a senior deferral program, but even though the requirements aren't exactly the same, you are getting to the same type of...
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I would point out, you know, after we passed the disabled property tax deferral program last session, which basically hitchhiked on to the senior deferral program, I did hear from a lot of seniors and disabled folks who expressed they appreciate the program, but they don't want to defer their taxes because it creates an additional liability and it diminishes an asset that they might want to leave for their children. So, you know, I think if you look at this bill, and I don't know what was the impetus behind this bill, but if you look at this bill as a way of providing some relief on property taxes, although it's not a lot per homeowner, it's something. Mm-hmm. It provides some relief for low-income senior homeowners, similar to the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, which provides some relief for low-income renters.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bates?
Well, I think he answered my question. Thank you, Representative Witt. I was trying to figure out what is the policy we're trying to get through here with this bill, and it wasn't perfectly clear. And my question was, how does this affect renters? And cause I know there's some kind of a program for renters to get tax, get some relief from this thing. And that's what Representative Witt went to. So that's, I'm guessing, who brought this bill forward?
Speaker's action at work.
Nobody knows.
Mr. Chairman, I think there is a legitimate policy consideration here. I think obviously we need to look at the revenue impact on this and the fiscal impact on this, and kind of put it in the long list of deserving,
that's why we're
you know, tax relief measures, and, you know, at some point in time try to weigh those things out and determine which direction we want to go.
Yeah, and I think, too, that it seems to me there ought to be a way to coordinate the benefits and the and qualification thresholds and all of that for the between a program such as this and the deferral program so that you... maybe a tiering of optional benefits so that somebody could make a determination whether they would want to continue to make their own tax payments but get the partial benefit through the tax credit program, or if they can't cash flow even that much, then they would be able to put themselves in under the deferral program. It seems to me there ought to be a way to coordinate these so that they do work together.
If I might add, one of the comments that we got from our staff on the bill was regarding the various programs that there are, including elderly rental assistance and senior deferral and disabled deferral, and then this plan and several others. They all seem to have a little bit of different age thresholds. So it is helpful, you know, if you do establish a policy about these kinds of programs, is just have sort of a standard age, standard income, standard, that might be useful.
Okay. All right. Well, Representative Wood, that's precisely why I wanted to hear this, was to get an airing of policy direction that we ought to be looking at and might want to go if we can find a means at some point along the way here to fund that. Certainly be aware of it anyway in our list of options as we move on to the session. Anybody else here that would like to testify on House Bill 2439? Any other comments from the committee? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2439, and we are adjourned.
more than we now.
Meeting. I'm hoping to get